Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Gravé, Susan Wright, and Matt Spaeth, revealing the truth about the food we eat.
Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now, revealing the truth about the food we eat. Food Integrity Now can be found on Facebook at Food Integrity Now. Our website is foodintegritynow.org, and we do a weekly show, and we archive all of our shows on our website. You can listen on our website. You can find us on iTunes and other podcasts. Groups out there, and we're really excited to have on our show tonight Alice Feiring. Alice is an award-winning food and wine journalist and author of the book Battle for Wine and Love, and we're going to mention her most current book in a minute. She is formerly the wine travel columnist for The Time. She now writes for New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, Condé Nast Traveler, and the Los Angeles Time Magazine, among many others. Tonight we're going to be discussing her recent book that I just finished reading a couple nights ago called Naked Wine, Letting Grapes Do What Come Naturally. Welcome, Alice.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on your show. Alice, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself first before we get started? I have lots of questions.
where does one start when one is asked? Tell us about yourself. At what point, I guess my wine life, how I started in wine probably.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the most relevant. I started out, as I said in my previous book, in probably diapers, drinking Manischewitz mixed with seltzer. So I started drinking at a very young age, probably about 3. And didn't really start to drink. And like many people of my generation, started out on Matus and Lancers, went to graduate school in dance therapy up in Boston, Massachusetts, had a roommate who was who collected wine and was in the wine business. And she had these wine tastings every week, a couple of them, and I sat in, not really ever thinking about learning about wine. And I developed a very quick routine of I would speed taste through them all just to try to get to the ones that I liked the best before anybody else did. So purely selfish. But it did train me up to be a very quick taster. But at some point when I realized that I knew a wine list and I had way more wine knowledge than I ever expected, there was kind of no going back. Then I moved back to New York to write. I pitched stories about something I knew about, which was wine, food, and design. I had a book to write in 2000, the Food and Wine Magazine Official Wine Guide, and that was a big turning point in my life because I had to super taste like crazy. I just was hating many of the wines that I was tasting. And I was like, what happened to the Barberas that I love, the Nebbiolos? What happened to, it seemed like entire regions had changed the way they made wine. And I did a little bit of investigation, and I realized that the wines that I still loved were the wines made naturally. And the wines that I was hating were the wines that were made geared to a certain taste. And then I found out what was done to the wine to try to make it taste a certain way. And that's when I entered the world of wine additive and what could be done to a grape and, you know, how many of the 200 approved additives are allowed in wine. And I started spending a lot of time in the vineyards, getting very close to a lot of winemakers and a lot of people who worked the vines. And that was really in the year 2001 when I became who I am, and I realized what I was going to write about and what I was going to drink and what I was going to champion.
Wow. Well, I guess we'll start at the very beginning. A lot of people, you know that there's a difference between natural foods and organic foods, and a lot of people don't know. I certainly do know, because in the food industry, natural doesn't carry a lot of weight with me. But organics does. So what is the difference between organic and natural wine?
Well, organic really does, when you see, let's start with organic. There are two different kind of classifications. One is made from organic grapes. One is organic wine. Made with organic grapes basically means you can do anything into the winery. That's all you have is an organic grape inside the bottle. But it means if you yeast, it does have to be an organic yeast. But you can add anything else. So you can deacidify, you can reacidify, you can put it through reverse osmosis, you can do any number of like high processing. You can add gum arabic, you can add powder tannins that a lot of people have allergies, no testing is being done on. You can add the approved legal limit of sulfur. As long as it just says made with organic grapes, you can treat it like a conventional wine.
Really?
Yeah. That is what most people see, made with organic grapes. They assume it's an organic wine. It is not. Organic wine, on the other hand, does have some limits to what you can do to it. But basically, but the main thing about organic wine is that it can't have any sulfites. But still, you can do a lot to it. So the organic wine category really is just about sulfites.
Oh, that's interesting, because I didn't realize that, because I've seen wine that is labeled as organics, but it says contains added sulfites.
Yeah, then it actually is just wine made with organic grapes.
Okay, so that's how you know the difference.
Right. And then you've got to look for made with 100% organic grapes, because then there's, some people can to say there's a 75% category, so maybe not. Just the way organic food can have a certain amount of non-organic product in it.
Is there like a percentage that it has to be classified organic grapes? I know that with food sometimes it'll say organic, but then it'll say 95% organic.
No, you're not going to see that on the label. You basically have to look for made with 100% organic grapes, and you will be able to find that. But then again, like I said, there are 200 approved additives that the FDA let wineries put in their wine, and unless you look for, as far as certification, the only thing that's going to be close to a natural wine that has certification will be biodynamic wine. Has more restrictions on what you can do in the winery.
Can you explain what biodynamic wine is
Biodynamic wine is actually, the wine category is new, but it's based on a series of lectures given by a philosopher named Rudolf Steiner in late 1920s. And he really just did research and studying into an ancient way of growing, not just grapes, but all sorts of agriculture that was linked to the lunar calendar and also based on a series of preparations that are either animal, mineral, or vegetable. So nothing synthetic, far less synthetic than organic viticulture, organic agriculture. Basically, you're dealing with the cow dung, nettles, chamomile. All the preparations are really just found in nature. And linked to, there are certain prescribed times that you do work in the vineyard, and it's a very ancient way of just working with the seasons and the moon in your vineyard. Now, that was taken to the wine processing just fairly recently, where Demeter said, okay, fine, so it's just the way, you have biodynamic products or beauty products, or there are many biodynamic products. They said, well, it's not in keeping to be able to do biodynamic grapes, and then you're going to do all this process to them, so let's put some limits on what you can do. So until recently, you really couldn't do much. They just recently changed it. But it's maximum 100 parts per million sulfur, but you're really not allowed to add tannin, acid, gum arabic. You're not allowed to reverse osmose. It's actually not so bad. It really does limit. It's as close, it's closest that we have right now to any certification to a natural one.
Oh, great. Well, how
we get
hard
to that
is...
name, natural, which is problematic.
Yeah, right, right. So how difficult is it to make wine according to this naked standard?
It's actually pretty easy, as I found out when I tried to do it in California. All you have to do is work really carefully and watch your wine, which, of course, is going to be difficult if you're making thousands and thousands and thousands of cases. But if you're making a small amount of wine, let's say 5,000 cases and under, you just have to be committed, and it has to be in your soul, and you have to watch. It's like you have to watch to make sure that your wine is a living substance, that it doesn't get attacked by any bacteria. But the more I spend time in the vineyards, the more I realize if you're working well in the vineyard, you're not spraying with chemicals, you have a very, very healthy system, you really did all your work. And then you just have to watch and make sure nothing goes wrong in the winery. That's all you have to do.
Well, in the book, you take on this venture of making your own wine. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I just loved it. I loved the way you approached it. And share with our listeners about kind of just the basics of the process that you went through, starting from, the Sagrantino? Is that the, am
Sagrantino.
I pronounced? Sagrantino grapes that you use in California, which there's not a whole lot of those types of grapes in California. And I'm curious if it was difficult using those type of grapes. And just explain a little bit about the process you went through.
All right. Well, it was an odd thing to fly out from the East Coast to make wine in California. I think I described it as kind of waiting for the water to break, only it wasn't my water. I had to wait for somebody else's water to break and then rush out there to be ready when the grapes were ready to be picked.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a little bit strange in itself. But when this was first proposed to me, I was going to make wine in Oregon, and I was going to be given a half a ton of grapes and just basically let alone to do exactly what I wanted. This was a little bit of a different situation where I was working on wine that was going to belong to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But he was really kind enough to say, okay, you're in charge of the project. Now, this is the way a lot of wine is made in California, with somebody, I guess, art directing it, which is not the kind of winemaking that's close to my heart, but there I was doing it. So I get out there, and I really wanted to pick my own grapes because, first of all, I love picking grapes, and was not able to do that because there are these team of pickers that pick for you. In the end, I had more grapes than I thought I would have. It was a ton and a half. I was making it in a commercial winery, and there was an owner of the wine that had to be appeased. So we picked later than I wanted, which meant the wine was going to have a higher alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one thing, even though I was trying very hard to make a natural wine, which to me means nothing added, nothing taken away, the alcohol needed to come down, and that meant the winemaker I was working with had to add water. And this is what is done a lot in California wine to bring the alcohol down, is just really water during the fermentation process. You know, you think, well, big deal, it's just water. But on the scale of things, it's not so horrible, but it still felt pretty bad. Anyway, the best thing for me, and what I really loved, and I sound like a little kid with this, I loved getting in and treading the grapes every day. And of course, everybody thinks Lucy Ricardo and that famous scene.
That's exactly where I went when I read that part.
But it was the only thing that I really had control over. And it is a very important part, because when you get in and tread, you are dealing with the tannin that is released from the grapes. And it's, but even more than that, you get to feel the start of fermentation with your body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really being part of this chemical process, this fermentation, that was very exciting. Anyway, I don't really know what to say about it. It was fascinating being around a commercial winery to see exactly how much stuff does get added to other people's wines, and it's very different from the way I view wine, which is connected to the vintage.
Right. Well, tell us about the tannins a little bit. You know, people may not understand the whole process of what you were talking about, you know, with the tannins.
Of course.
Explain that.
Okay. Now, there are every grape has tannin. Like there's tannin in tea. It's when you taste a wine, it's got that little, you know, the kind of grit, that little dry feeling in the mouth, like from tea and coffee and or banana. I mean, all those things have some tannin, and you extract the tannin from the grape skin. And there are some grapes that are more tannic than others. It's tannic acid, so it's a preservative of the grape, a natural preservative, and you get the color from it. Now, because people have decided that color is really important in order to sell your wine, and tannin is very important for this grape structure, for the wine structure, I don't know, like probably around the 1980s, late 70s, people started using powdered or liquid tannin to add to the wine so they can ensure a better color and a better structure. But you're talking about oak tannin, chestnut tannin, and pure grape tannin, which is not necessarily from the wine that you're making. And it's, to me, it's a manipulation. It's also, a lot of people have a big allergy to these added tannins.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of something that's irrelevant. A grape has all it needs. It doesn't need this extra stuff.
Then why is it added?
For control.
Okay.
As one winemaker told me that he likes to, California and a lot of the New World likes to pick grapes that are almost overripe. By that point, they're not going to give you a wine that has any structure at all. So what they do is they grow it overripe, they make the wine, and as this guy said, I like putting everything in the beginning, and that way, like a soup thing, like a soup stock, that way I can take it out. So through technology, you can fine-tune a wine to exactly the way you think the market wants it to taste, as opposed to this, like the slew of grapes that, I mean, wines that I drink, and I think most people think is what they're drinking, is the winemaker's adventure with a given year and just giving you the best thing that those grapes can possibly give you on their own.
Wow. You say that so beautifully. Anyway, we are going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Linda Masterson, Soul Purpose Astrologer, works with astrological tools and with guides in the non-physical to assist ones in knowing their soul purpose. Important in this process is identification of significant blockages. In each session, tools are provided for working with self to clear resistance and free talents, skills, and abilities to fuller expression. The goal is to take responsibility for and to accelerate the healing process. Phone sessions are offered by Linda. Please visit Linda at lindamasterson.com or call 808-651-0307. Again, that's 808-651-0307.
If you ever dreamed of swimming with the dolphins in the wild? This is Carol Gravey with Wild Dolphin Swim Adventures, and I just teamed up with Sharon Farrell of RockyMountainSacredJourneys.com. We're here to invite you on an amazing journey of self-discovery, fun, and adventure. Your adventure will include swimming with the wild dolphins, past life regression or Tai Chi energy treatment, gourmet organic meals, and much, much more. To find out about our upcoming trip in October, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or call us at 415-302-7100. Again, that's 415-302-7100. Hope you can join us. Mahalo. Welcome back to Food Integrity Now, and we are talking with Alice Fearing, the author of Naked Wine. And we have been talking about, when we left for break, talking about tannins, natural tannins versus added tannins. And one of the things that you mentioned, Alice, was that a lot of people are allergic to these added tannins. What I hear more often is people say, I'm allergic to sulfites.
Exactly. And you know, in some ways, sulfites and added sulfur deserves bad rap, and it gets a bad rap. And there's a big difference between, in a natural wine, well, absolutely no added sulfur, or maybe a low sulfur wine, maybe 20 to 30 parts per million, as opposed to what is allowed, which is 250 in this country, 250 parts per million. It's a huge difference. And there's also another big difference of, most of the sulfur that is added to wine is a petrochemical derivative. And, of course, a lot of people are allergic to petrochemicals, besides being allergic to sulfur. And these things, to my knowledge, and I tried to figure out, are not being studied, and absolutely not being studied. Now, why is sulfur at all needed? It depends on how much risk you're going to take as a winemaker. Nobody wants a wine to, you know, go off, re-ferment, be thoroughly unstable. And nobody wants, at least I don't want a winemaker who works hard all year to lose their entire vintage because of some bacterial invasion.
Mm-hmm.
But most people that I know who make natural wine, it's very different to say, my goal is to make a wine without sulfur. So you go through the whole winemaking process without sulfur. You let the wine finish, and then maybe you put a little bit, just at bottling. It's very different from zapping the wine with the full range of sulfur allowed by the FDA. Very different. So, you know, as far as taste, because I, you know, there are times that I really feel a sulfur. I'm getting more and more of a sensitivity to sulfur. I get the headache. But a lot of people say they get, when they get a headache, they say, and you'll probably hear this a lot, I can't drink red wine because I'm allergic to sulfur, but so I drink white.
Right, I have heard that.
Right. Well, white wine gets way more sulfur than red wine. So as soon as somebody says that, I know it's not the sulfur.
Right.
And then I think, okay, what is it? It could be a lot of things. It could be the tannin. It could be the histamines, because there are more histamines in red wine. I do have a very, actually it's kind of a very funny story that leads me to tannins. It's somebody that I know said her husband wouldn't sleep in the same bed with her when she drank red wine, so she had to drink white wine. And I said, well, okay, we just blame this one on me tonight. make sure you sleep in the same bed with your husband, and let's have some red wine. And we had a very, very natural wine. She called me up in the morning and says, you know, Alice, had no problem with it. So I just think there's a lot that's going on in wine that is not being studied that people have a lot of allergies to. I know somebody who gets has the same problem with some other things, and I think they were tested for tannins, and they get a terrible case of the runs when they have a very commercial wine.
Hmm. So, and there's also these 200 approved additives that aren't labeled,
right.
Aren't required to be labeled, which is not surprising, considering that the FDA doesn't do a very good job on labeling,
in my opinion.
But so let's talk about some of those additives. What are some of the worst ones that you know about?
Well, you know, it is, I think actually there are probably some worse additives allowed in food than wine. But I just don't like them interfering with my wine. But there are people, like there are, in those 200 additives, many of them are different kinds of enzymes.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them is lysozyme. Actually, I'm pronouncing it like the French because I've I don't even know how to pronounce it in English, but it's lyozyme, I suppose. And it's an egg derivative. A lot of people have egg allergies. And actually, a winemaker I know who used it said, well, he used it once. And also, speaking of runs, just got it on his fingers and had an immediate case of the runs just from touching it. And was incredibly nauseous. He said he would never go near it again. So that's one of them. There's another, I hate the use of gum arabic. Hate it. Is it going to kill you? No. It's sort of like, but why are you adding that to my wine? It has nothing to do with the wine. There is there's an anti-foaming agent that can be used. And why use an anti-foaming agent? So when you're doing these huge vats of wine, you don't have it bubble over in fermentation. And that is that particular one is a known carcinogenic. If I have to do a quick Google, because I can never remember the exact name, but you'll never see it on a label. But you can assume it's basically going to be in every big commercial wine. Like if you go to a supermarket, it's going to be there.
And what is that additive called again? Or are you looking that up? Or?
I am actually looking on my index.
Okay.
Because I've got a list on it.
Because
even though I know my wine terms pretty well, I actually am not too good on my technical. Come on, where are you? Index. I will find it.
Okay, well, no worries.
Dimethyl something or other, but we're going to get there.
Okay. Well, but it's a known carcinogen, right?
Yep. Dimethyl polysiloxane.
Doesn't sound good.
No, there are a bunch of defoaming agents, and that's just one of them.
Yeah. So what about
dimethyl dicarbonate? That's probably the worst one. Dimethyl dicarbonate.
Mm-hmm. And it's not required that that these ingredients are labeled. So,
no.
I mean, it's no question why. I mean, if you were looking at a bottle of wine and you saw that ingredient on it, you might think twice.
Oh yeah. You might, but now I try to find out from the FDA. They're more interested in having a nutritional label. And it's, I think you're not drinking wine for, you might be drinking it for heart benefit, for other things, but do you really need to know the nutritional? I would much rather know whether it was put through process. How badly was it filtered? What it was filtered with? What kind of bacteria was added? What kind of yeast was added? That's one of those things.
Yeah. Let's talk about yeast for a minute. I know in the book, natural wine, you don't add yeast, right?
You don't need to. Yeah.
But why do they add yeast?
All right. Well, if you're not growing organically, there's actually a lot of good reasons. If you're not growing organically and you've got a vineyard full of chemicals, you really don't have a yeast population out there. In fact, I remember one guy that I met in Italy, and I said to this really fine winemaker, and I said, so why are you inoculating for fermentation? And he said, we're converting now to organics, but for years we farmed chemically, and you don't want, there's no yeast. I mean, that wine would taste awful. So that's one reason. Another reason is because, say you're using a grape like Viura, which is a Spanish white grape, but Sauvignon Blanc is really popular, so you want it to smell like Sauvignon Blanc, that grassy, citrusy thing. So you use a specific yeast that makes the wine smell that way.
Oh, really?
I've used the yeast, and there are so many different yeasts, and I love looking at the catalogs. And you can just select certain yeast to bring out certain flavors. So it's a little bit like the flavor and fragrance suitcase that for artificial flavoring that people
Well, it's interesting. We had somebody type in a question on our chat. The question was, how do you get the flavor you want and prevent contamination if you don't add yeast?
First of all, how do you get the flavor you want? First of all, you don't, as a winemaker who is working really well in their land, they're growing certain grapes.
Mm-hmm.
You're growing certain grapes because you want those flavors, not because you want to paint them in. So basically, you want to do as good a job as you can in the vineyard and work with the grapes that you love. And they should taste different every year. The grape does have certain characteristics, but also in the old world, you really believe that certain grapes perform best on certain soil. So if I grow Gamay, which happens to be a grape that I love, on granite, it's going to be very different if you grow it on limestone or if you grow it on clay. And all of the, what you plant is going to have an effect on the, you know, the, on the soil. Where you plant is going to have an effect on the flavor. And if you're in wine for the adventure, you're in it for every year. Long just work well, I'm there, whatever nature gives you, because it's going to be interesting. And so you just, it's very different. The new world has an idea. I want my wine to taste a certain way, but the old world has an idea of, I'm going to do the best I can in each vintage, and I'm going to give you something interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. This same caller says different yeasts have a large impact on flavor compounds in addition to the grape.
Mm-hmm.
So further to the question said, he's talking about contamination from
Brettanomyces.
That
is... It's funny because remember I talked about, and I said, how do you pronounce this in English, lysozyme or lyozyme?
Uh-huh.
Lyozyme is this egg white derivative enzyme that is used to eliminate Brettanomyces,
uh-huh,
because people are really afraid of it.
Uh-huh.
And most, if you work clean, the most important thing about natural winemaking is that you have to work really cleanly. Now, this is not about being antiseptic, because once you start being antiseptic, it's like people who, you know, make cheese. You can't have too much of an antiseptic environment because your bacteria won't grow. Same thing. But you have to be very clean. And if you're very clean, you're not going to have a problem. If you're not so clean, you have to use these other tricks.
Right. So after reading your book, I thought, I want to try to make my own wine. How difficult is it?
It's shockingly simple.
Really?
Really is shockingly simple. But, you know, you have first, I remember, you know, in the book, when I was worried that it wasn't starting, fermentation wasn't starting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was my first vintage, and, you know, Kevin, who I was working with, laughed at me. Oh, temperature control, huh? Because I said, let's put it out in the sun. And he laughed at me. And I was nervous. What if, have you ever had this feeling that, probably not, but out on the Northeast, And some winters, I found myself thinking, what if spring doesn't come?
And, no, I've never had that feeling, but go ahead.
There was one, probably about 10 years ago, I remember a winter that went on forever, and I love foraging for ramps. And I just remember just like being in the snow, and it just wouldn't go away. And I remember saying, what if spring doesn't come this year? Like, what would happen? And it's a little bit that way with wine. Now, if for some reason you really don't start fermentation, then you add yeast. Sometimes nature can deal you an empty carousel.
Oh, wow.
But it doesn't have, but it's a matter of confidence. I really have never met the European winemaker who works naturally that ever had a problem. But I have bumped into people that said they took 2 years to finish fermenting.
Wow.
Without any intervention. That was unusual. But a lot of the winemakers out there who are committed to working this way, okay, I'll wait 2 years.
Yeah. I'm getting all kinds of questions on our chat right now.
Oh,
so, one question is, what type of fermentation vessels do you advocate using?
That's really very interesting. You know, it's do I advocate? What I do, I love concrete. I just love concrete.
Wow.
Maybe enamel lined concrete. And as far as the winemaker is certainly not going to use any concrete because it's way too expensive. The nice thing about concrete is once you've got a concrete tank, it's around forever. Concrete is making a comeback in California, and it is definitely on the upswing and a revival in Europe where it was used for centuries because it's perfect temperature control. You don't really have a problem with Brettanomyces in it as long as you keep it clean. And, by the way, I never explained, Brettanomyces can make, it is a bacterial infection that makes a wine, it can give, well, how to say this, smells like a herd of sheep, basically. Okay, so that's Brett. Another one that is quite good is, depending, you know, home winemaker, a glass carboy, gives a nice clean flavor. It doesn't impart anything bad to it. It's just grapes. You're going to get a very, very pure flavor. And a lot of winemakers who I know who don't have a lot of money use fiberglass.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which they find is a very good neutral container. So you can say that I like a neutral container. I don't like stainless because it's doesn't have any life.
Oh, okay. I have another question. Any information, positive or negative, about the oaking process for an oaky wine?
Well, for me, it's going to be negative. It's like oak is a fine vessel to use for fermentation and for aging a wine. But new wood and toasty new wood is something that I find extremely difficult, and I can't abide by it. I don't like anything adding a flavor to a wine. I really think a grape grown well has everything that it needs. So, but old wood is quite fine. And historically, I know people who use oak for, I've seen 100-year-old oak containers. They don't need to be bought new every year, and they're quite expensive. But old wood does get a neutrality. It does a nice exchange with the air, which I believe in making wine with a little bit of presence of air. I've looking on my shelves, a great percentage of the wine there is made in old wood.
Wow. I have another question here. How can a vintner stop the yeast to preserve sweetness in the wine without killing it with a chemical?
Well, you can drop. Well, you don't have to preserve the yeast. Could wonder if this person could rephrase the question, or let me see whether I can decipher it. If you want to make a sweet one, you do want to arrest the. Well, there are two ways. One is you can arrest the fermentation by adding spirit to it, which is the way port and Madeira is made, or any fortified wine like sherry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way. And, of course, you're going to be dealing with like a 20% alcohol wine. Or you can just drop the temperature.
Mm, okay. Well, I'm not sure if that's answering his question because I see that he's typing again. But so these are all great questions. And
but most people do it by sulfuring the wine at that point.
Yeah. So I have a question. You know, you go out and you're asked to taste wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody calls you out and says, we want you to come taste our wines. Explain what that involves for you. What's that process like?
When I go to the wineries, when I go into Europe and do this, well, what is the process like? Usually, going to be different actually in California than it is in Europe. But so in Europe, I like to go into the vines, see the way they work, see how they farm, ask questions. Because the more I do this, the more I realize how important the farming is. And the decisions that you make in the land is really important. Then we go into the winery and we grab a couple of glasses, and the winemaker grabs a pipette, a long glass, like straw. And then we taste out of barrel to see what the new vintage is like, and we swirl and spit, usually spit on the ground. Then we, after I go through all the various barrels and get a good sense of what was going on, what their land is like, and what a new wine is like, then we would go into the winery and taste some already bottled wines. Pretty easy.
Mm.
But it's kind of formulaic, and it often starts very early in the morning.
So when you go into a restaurant, do you ever go into a restaurant, well, I probably know the answer to this, and you just can't find a wine that you like?
Yeah, I usually don't even get to the point of sitting down.
You look at their wine list first?
I choose where I want to go by the wine list or whether they'll let me bring my own wine. And I could drive friends crazy. We won't go in there. And walking around like crazy looking for a place to drink. It happens a lot. And just for sport, sometimes I just look at a bunch of wine lists online to see, what could I drink there? And it's really nice when I meet somebody else who's like me because it's, I feel like such a pain in the ass. But I really don't want a wine full of crap. I just don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's great. I mean, I'm that way about my food, and I want to learn to be the same way about my wine. And your book has given me a whole new way of looking at wine, so I really appreciate that. I have a question from someone. It's specific as to a couple of types of wine. I don't know if you're going to get into it. She wants to know your opinion on the integrity of Bonterra wine, organic wine, and or Paul Newman organic wines.
Well, Paul Newman makes wines from organic grapes. He doesn't have any organic ones.
Okay.
And I don't feel comfortable talking about the integrity of Bonterra.
Yeah, that's what I had a feel.
You know, it's I've never met the Benzigers who own it. They've been great proponents of biodynamics. All I can say is that they do make a kind of wine that is not geared to my particular taste, and that's because the wines are way riper than I like, and I don't feel they reflect a sense of place, and they are great advocates of biodynamic farming.
Okay.
Lovely.
Okay, we are going to take a break on that note, and we'll be right back.
My name name is Jennifer, and I'm a health fanatic. I admit it. I read all the labels, eat organic food, and I'm very aware of what I put into my body. I practice holistic health, use alternative healing products, and never miss my daily dose of Willard water. Willard water is made with fossilized organics and contains nearly 24 trace minerals that are essential to maintaining strong bones, heart health, and good energy. Simply adding a quarter cap full of Willard water to my tea makes a tremendous impact on my overall well-being. Willard water is tasteless and odorless. Dr. Willard's patented catalyst helps our bodies better absorb the minerals and nutrients we need to maintain optimal health. If you care about your health, you'll try Willard water today.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
Hi everyone, this is Carol again, and I just wanted to talk to you about one of our new sponsors, Hole in the Wall Herb and Vitamin Shop up in Woodland Park. The owners, Mark and Nancy Duvall, are not only close personal friends, but they're also my nutritional gurus. They are now selling, teaching, and doing Acira bioenergetic testing on their clients. I had this done, and I found out all my food allergies, emotional stressors, environmental sensitivities, hormonal balance, and I received a customized homeopathic remedy. Please call them for more information at 1-800-437-3240. Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We're talking with Alice Fiering, and her book is called Naked Wines. Alice, where can people get your book?
Well, Amazon certainly is an incredibly convenient place to go, or it would be really great if you went to your local independent bookstore and asked them to carry it if they don't, just because independent bookstores are, you know, need their support. And it's in keeping with the spirit of my book.
Right. Well, I really enjoyed it, and I liked your sense of humor in the book, and I thought it was, there were parts of the book that were technical, which I enjoyed too, because it educated me, but I liked your story too. I liked the story of, you making the wine, and there was a real human element to that, so I thought it was really wonderful.
One of the reasons that I did write this book is that, you know, a lot of the big companies are starting to get very threatened by the idea of natural wine and are saying that it's only about marketing and it doesn't exist and people are just, you know, it's just that terrible word natural is all about marketing. And I wanted to show those people that, no, there are people here who are absolutely committed to making wine. They're farmers. They're not. It's not like the new world where there is a CEO and there's somebody else working in the field. And no, these are about people who are working in the vineyard and the same hands that tend the vine, make the wine, and they're crazy and passionate about what they do. And marketing. What marketing? And I felt really strongly that that was an important message to hammer home.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the difference between big agra and the small farmer.
Exactly. Thank you for bringing that up. Exactly.
Yeah. It's, you know, the small farmer is being pushed out by big agra, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah. So. It's not a good thing. And it's there are some, like copper and some other things that are used in natural farming because it's kind of essential for the most part. But it's very different when you're dealing with small farmers and the impact on the environment in a place as opposed to dealing with the new world where you can have 1,000 acres of a vineyard and it's such a monoculture. It's very different.
Yeah. So you... How do you feel about California wine these days? Is it coming along? I mean, I know your favorite is the French, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is coming along. It is.
My brother owns a winery and
really?
He has a vineyard in Sonoma.
Does he hate me?
I don't think so. He grows organic grapes. And he says his wine is organic. Mm-hmm. And it's his winery is called Grieve Family Winery. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar? It's a small winery, and he grows Sauvignon Blanc grapes, and he has a Merlot. Mm-hmm. And that's about all I know about it. So, he doesn't hate you.
Okay, good.
So how can the average consumer, you know, the person like me that wants to just go to my local wine store and buy a really good natural wine, what will I need to look for?
That is going to be really difficult. And
that's what I thought.
That is going to be really difficult because there's nothing. The best thing you can do is look for something that says Biodemeter certified biodynamic wine. And that is the easiest thing that you can do. The other thing you can do is shop the back label. Basically, look for the importer. And here we're talking about European wines. So look for Louis Dresner, Jenny and Francois, Savio Suarez, all of those.
Are those names in your book?
Those names are in my book.
Okay, good.
And those people focus solely on natural wines. Mm-hmm. Now, and they are nationally available. You can, in America,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of a short list. And in the back of my book, there's a short list of personal favorites. But, you know, like Cotori is Cotri is available. You do have to look. It's going to be difficult. And actually, wondering whether people can email me or go to my blog, alicefaring.com, and
Spell your name for our listeners so they can go to.
Yeah, so it's Alice, A-L-I-C-E, F as in Frank, E-I-R-I-N-G.com. And, you know, often I can help you. Sometimes what you've got to do is do mail order. Go to a website like Chambers Street Wines in New York City, and look at their website and look at their selection of natural wines and then see whether you can find those in your neighborhood or order from them. There are, you know, it's not easy, but it can be done. It can be done.
Yeah, I owned an art gallery for a short period of time, and I had a Colorado winery in my art gallery just because it allowed me not to have to get a liquor license. They could have an off-site tasting room. And now their wine, they said they use no herbicides or pesticides mm-hmm. on their grapes.
Right.
So it's called Book Clip Vineyards. But I enjoyed their wine. But do you know of any good natural Colorado wines, or is that a stretch?
I must plead ignorance, is that I have never had a wine from Colorado.
Okay. Well, the grapes that they grow here are the Cab Franc.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah, it does really well here, and down in the Palisades area, which is, you know, kind of southeast portion.
What do you feel about your local wine out there?
I don't feel like there's a whole lot of great wine with uh-huh. the local wine. I feel there are a few. And my standards are much lower than yours, I'm sure. But there's a few that mm-hmm. I do enjoy.
Okay. Well, about the way I feel about Long Island wine, you know, it's like every place can grow grapes, but maybe not every place can make great wine. It's kind of important to know one's limitations and make wine within those limitations. But I'm really curious now. I'm curious about tasting some Colorado Cab Franc. It's a grape that I like a lot.
Really? Well, yep. Good. Check it out. I forget how many wineries there are here, but you might be surprised. It's like, I think, like 300 wineries. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
But again, going back that they may be growing organically, but I don't know of any organic wine or naturally made wine in Colorado. In fact, I would kind of doubt it. Just, it doesn't mean that it's not going to happen, because right now people are wanting to make wine this way and starting really slowly.
Right.
But there are more people working this way than ever before in the States, and that's really
right.
Interesting.
Well, I just may have to start making my own wine.
Might.
I just put up a greenhouse this year. I'm going to be growing my own food, so why not make my own wine?
Right? Why not? So you grow, you know, like actually, and I would suggest if you're going to grow grapes, make a blend. You don't need to stick with one varietal, and that's the old way, because you never know what, you know, the weather's going to do every year. Do a little, you know, little mélange and pick them, stomp them up, put them in, and don't, you know, keep them in a clean place, not in the basement, and cool place. Like if you can, you know, have a nice air-conditioned room, that's actually pretty good.
Well, we don't have air conditioning. I'm at 8,500 feet here, so.
You don't need it. Perfect.
We don't need it.
Perfect. No, you've got a great, but just don't do it in the, you know, near an oil boiler. Because you're definitely going to go to vinegar if you do that, and it's an amazing process. It's amazing when that fermentation takes off, and you have this whoosh of life. And there's a reason that wine and has been enduring for, you know, like millennia. There's something very magical about that process of transformation and what it does to conversation and the table and. You know, there's something, is a cultural importance to it.
Yeah, I agree totally. And I really appreciate your passion for wine. And you've been, for me, it's been very helpful to learn about the whole process. And it's going to change the way I buy wine. And I have a feeling I'm going to be spending a lot more money on wine, however.
Well, you know, it's fun. I know that we're running out of time, but I recently did a story for the New York Times on great wines under $12. And I just took recommendations from people. But, of course, you can see by the kind of wines that I chose, that I put in there, that I edited it. And most of those 20 wines were natural, and they were under $12.
And oh, wow.
Find that. It's up there on the website, too.
Okay, great. And one final question from a listener. What type of sanitizer do you like?
I don't use sanitizer.
Okay.
I wash my hands with soap and water, and I really don't like the idea of a sanitizer.
Okay, that answers our question.
Okay.
So thank you so much, Alice.
Thank you.
Alice's book is called Naked Wine, Letting Grapes Do What Comes Naturally. I highly recommend it. It's not only informative, but it's a fun read. So thank you for being on our show. And you are listening to Food Integrity Now, and we will be back next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Carol, thank you so much.
Thank you.